Well, joining me in studio now to have a closer look at the day's trade is MTS Suliman from Sentio Capital. Thanks so much, MTS, for your time today. While the JSE lagging behind world equity markets today, a range of stocks coming off the boil, leaving the all share down. It's off a relatively high base, though. So how are you feeling at the moment?
Thank you, Alicia. Yeah, and we've seen some profit taking. I think there's some sort of reality setting in from the massive run that we've seen since December, since the outcome of the ANC election. And I think investors are taking some profits off the table. We've got the budget tomorrow, and by this time tomorrow, we know consumers are definitely going to be poorer in some sense, whether it be a VAT hike or fuel taxes or some sort of wealth tax. There's a gap that needs to be filled of 50 billion rand, and that needs to be filled somehow. So I think consumers will be under pressure from the budget come this time.
And that's potentially going to be the reality check for the markets, given the kind of momentum that's been generated by the election of Cyril Ramaphosa as the country's president. Of course, market reaction to individual corporate earnings also amplifying a lot of the movement on the markets today. Let's start off with BHP, because it was down close enough to 5% by the close. And that as it reported a 25% drop in profit, and despite upping its dividend by 38%. What have you made off those numbers?
Yeah, so if you look at on the face of it, you know, commodity prices have risen throughout last year. We've got a world economic growth that's very strong, both in the US and Europe and China. So we've got synchronized world growth, and we've seen commodity prices rise in the back of that. So I think it was slightly below market expectations. However, the dividend at 55 cents was very decent, and that's in line with expectations. But I think from here, if commodity prices stay at these elevated levels, you could see free cash flow going from $5 billion to $7 billion, which would make it $12 billion for the full year, which is encouraging. There is some pressure coming in from costs, and that will have to be managed. So as commodity prices have recovered, input costs have gone up as well, and they talked a lot about increasing productivity and labor efficiency to offset some of that cost creep. Mm-hmm. There is also that U.S. shale asset which is up for sale, and they are going to either have an IPO of that asset, or their preferred way to get rid of it would be a buyer that would come and buy that asset. So given the debt dynamics, you know, they've targeted $10 to $15 billion of net debt. They came in at $15.4 billion, slightly above, but by year end they should be within the target. And if they do manage to offload that shale asset, that will be a further return of cash to shareholders.
And of course, these are maneuverings that have become a common occurrence amongst the miners. Anglo American, no different, and that company expected to report results on Thursday. I know they're very different animals at this stage, but within that diversified complex, how's BHP and Anglo stacking up against each other in your books?
Yeah, I think our preference is for the diversified counters. We think you don't get the volatility should any commodity come under pressure. Earlier in the week, we had Pan African Resources reporting, and they're purely a gold play.
Yeah.
And we've seen that because of the stronger rand, they're making losses at these levels. So I think the diversifieds give you protection against a single commodity that could come under pressure.
And I guess AngloGold Ashanti's numbers today illustrative of that as well, where the South African operations have come under a lot of pressure. Yes, a lot of restructuring happening, but a loss position there being offset by its international operations more so.
Yeah, they've got some very good operating assets, and we've seen that their cost and their all-in sustaining cost at around $1,000 is still below the current spot price of gold. Mm. So they're making some decent margins. There was one or two once-offs in the numbers, as you mentioned, the restructuring costs in South Africa, as well as a provision for the silicosis fine that put some pressure on their reported number.
Yeah, let's take a look at Discovery, because it was the top performer today, up 3%, so certainly not disappointing the markets. It reported interim after-tax profit of 2.7 billion rand. That was up 30%. Declared a dividend increase of 15%, if I'm remembering it correctly. overall, I mean, Discovery seeming to do no wrong, even in a very tough economic climate.
Yeah, and it speaks to their shared value model of vitality being a very strong chassis onto which they build other products and expand into other geographic regions. So the big pleasing result was that their partner markets are starting to make profits. We've seen Ping An Health making a profit for the first time, and their Vitality partner markets in Europe and Asia also making profits. So it's a very capital light model that they could roll out to other geographies and monetize the sort of the technology that lies in Vitality.
Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see how that Vitality model, with Vitality influencing health behavior amongst consumers, you know, how that translates into the financial arena. Yes. And a better savings culture, I guess, in South Africa down the line. Overall, at this point in time, though, Imtiaz, what's your stock pick right now?
I'm going to go for AVI. They're a very good operator with very strong management, and they've got some leading brands in South Africa. For example, they've got Baker's Biscuits, Five Roses Tea, and with the stronger rand, we're going to see quite a meaningful reduction in input costs, which would drive an expansion of their margins. So they're very good allocators of capital. And if they don't find ways to deploy their capital within the business, they're not averse to returning that to shareholders. And they've consistently paid special dividends every 2 years. So I think AVI will benefit from an uptick in consumer sentiment and consumer spend. With inflation coming down in South Africa, the discretionary side of the business, such as Spitz and Kurt Geiger, will also see an uptick.
So and even if we see a VAT increase tomorrow, even if we see a fuel levy increase tomorrow?
Yeah, I think consumers will initially feel the pinch, but with inflation in relatively in check, below 6%, and real wage growth ahead of that, there is some opening up of consumers' disposable income, which would be beneficial for AVI.
Well, let's leave it there. Imtiaz, thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Imtiaz Silliman is with Sentio Capital. Well, we didn't manage to get to them, but straight after the break, we take a closer look at Imperial's interim results after it reported an 11% jump in revenue. So stay tuned for that conversation. Transport and Logistics Group Imperial has posted a record half-year revenue of 66.5 billion rand and a 16% jump in its headline earnings per share to 717 cents, driven largely by acquisition, increased vehicle sales and a strong showing from its Imperial Logistics unit. Stephen caught up with CEO Mark Lamberti a little earlier today and asked how the company pulled through the tough trading conditions.
In the last 3 years, there's been major restructuring. We've done something north of 40 disposals, north of 50 disposals of properties. As I'm sure your listeners will know, it's much harder to sell a business than to buy one. We've also bought some businesses, and the portfolio is looking right. As we did so, we've cleared up what one might call the conglomeration of Imperial. And we're now focused into two very clear businesses, one on logistics and one on motor. And the results are slowly starting to filter through now, and you're starting to see the beginning of that in these results.
I mean, you do say in the commentary that you're ending the most comprehensive organizational review of an SA multinational. So yes, it's been a pretty big shake-up of the business.
It has been a total change in the portfolio. It's been a total change in the management. We recently worked out that 23 of the top 32 business top 32 managers in the business were new in their positions, so it's been a change of management generally a different attitude towards what we own, how we own it, and how we're going to get returns. A more focused business, simplified to some extent, but the benefits not fully flowing through just yet.
You also talked about very clear focus on the motor side of the business and the logistics side of the business, Mark, and in the commentary today, you say by the end of June, early July, you will make a decision on whether to list those businesses separately. What are the benefits of separate listings for those two units?
Well, I think the record shows that when you list businesses separately, or when you remove businesses that have a clear segmental focus and let them react directly with the market, both in terms of their performance and in terms of raising debt and equity, that they perform better over time. It doesn't happen instantly necessarily, but having a business directly accountable to the market generally makes it a better business over time. At the same time, there is a view that having an investor able to access one or the other is better than them having to access both through Imperial. So both of those things are considerations for the board as we move towards deciding on whether we do it or not. The more practical considerations are around external factors, such as up until recently the political risk. We think that's abated largely at the moment. Market risk, there could be a correction in the market, so we're not going to announce an unbundling until we're absolutely ready and sure about that. But internally, also around our gearing. We don't want to have separately listed businesses that are not properly geared to be able to implement their strategies. So we're still working on that.
Do they operate with separate balance sheets at the moment?
Yes.
Is it quite easy to separate the debt of the two companies?
Yes. In fact, throughout our results, if you get into the detail of our results, there's very clear separation of the businesses strategically, managerially, financially, and that's been a lot of work in recent times.
Any benefits of keeping the businesses together under the Imperial banner?
Yes, I think the counter view would be that having a larger business perhaps makes you more accessible to certain investors. If the day-to-day tradability of the business is below a certain level, some investment houses can't invest in the business. And one would say in tough times, having a bigger balance sheet might be to our advantage. And that's precisely the kind of things that we have to evaluate.
Mm. Where are you seeing the biggest growth opportunities for the business at the moment? Is it in the Imperial Logistics business or in the motors business?
There are bits in both. We are seeing very nice growth in Africa, continue to see that. Our Nigerian business performed well. We even seen good growth in Nigeria, in Kenya, where we just acquired a business. It was slowed a little by the political developments there. But our pharmaceutical footprint in Africa is extraordinary. We are currently distributing about 30 million packs of pharmaceuticals per month into Africa. So we're a serious distributor of pharmaceuticals in Africa, and that's growing. Our South African logistics business also did well, particularly on the commodity side. And in Europe, our automotive business and our shipping business outside of Europe, and it's attached to Europe as a subsidiary, but in South America did well. So those are all good growth areas. On the motor side, the bottom end of the market is doing better than the upper end of the market. So, and we play to that sweet spot at the moment. Mm-hmm. Hyundai, Kia, and Renault are our imported brands, and they're doing well, as are pre-owned cars. So it's in various areas of the business there's growth, but of course all of that we're hoping will be fueled and accelerated by a more positive climate in South Africa.
Of course, when the bottom end of the market for your motor business does well, that does impact on margin, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The margins are thinner in that end of the market.
Mm. The second half, you say you expect a big pickup in revenue and operating profits,
yes,
across both businesses, but also for the group as a whole. So pretty optimistic for the second half of the year. Is that partly coloured by the change in the political landscape we're seeing in South Africa?
No, that would be kind of the cherry on the top. We are confident that the business is in place. At particularly the headline earnings per share level, we're coming off a low base on last year, so there'll be good growth there. And so we are guiding the market on the fact that operating profit and revenues will be higher in the second half across both businesses, and headline earnings per share will be much higher in the second half for the group.
Mm. I mean, will Imperial be stepping up investments in South Africa following the change in the political landscape if things do go as people think they will at the moment?
Not necessarily, and the reason is that I've mentioned before to you and to others that the reason Imperial is expanding outside of South Africa is because we have very strong market positions in South Africa, and it would be very difficult for us to do acquisitions in South Africa. They would either be stopped by the Competitions Commission or by the OEMs, who don't allow too big a concentration of any dealership in the country. So our reason for expanding outside of South Africa is that still holds. But investing in our own business to make sure it's a prime business and growing, both in logistics and motor, would be what we do.
Well, that was Mark Lamberti, CEO of Imperial. And that's where we leave things with you for this hour. After the break, though, it's the Roffey Review. And I'll be seeing you back at 7 o'clock. We have also a bumper Budget Day special broadcast lined up tomorrow with expert analysis throughout the day. And you don't want to miss that. So tune in then for that from 1 p.m. For now, though, I'll see you, as I said, at 7 o'clock.